This is Theremin 30. 30 minutes of Theremin music, news, events, and interviews with a new episode about every 30 days. Now, here's your host from Denver, Colorado, USA, Rick Reed.
Hey, welcome to another edition of the Theremin 30 podcast. You know, last month we had an episode fall a little later in the month, and that kind of threw off my schedule. So here it is, the end of August, and I'm just going to call this the September episode. This time around, I've got new music from Dr. G, Anna Glyph, and Kepa Lehtinen, plus more music from the Divine Hand Ensemble's current album, Aria 51. And my special guest this month is Drew Raison, the executive director of EMIAP, the Electronic Music Education and Preservation Project. It's a nonprofit organization that runs a huge musical instrument archive in Philadelphia, and you can imagine what we're going to talk about. Now, to kick off the music for this show, let's get physical. I mean, let's learn about physics. Here's the latest and final single from Dr. G's Physics album. If you don't know him, Dr. G is sort of a mad scientist who brings together the forces of music and physics to entertain and educate kids all over Canada. This track is called Motion.
If I was drifting in outer space, no gravity keeping me in place, I move at a constant pace, I'd be in motion. I'd be in motion. But if I was acted on by a force, it would change my speed and alter my course. And I would do the same to it in reverse. I'd be in motion. I'd be in motion.
We are in motion. Standing on a planet that's in motion. Moving on the star that's in motion. We're part of a galaxy in motion. We are in motion. And if you're moving to the left or moving to the right, if you're sleeping in your bed or if you're dancing all night, we are in motion. We're part of the universe in motion. We are in motion.
If you knew my trajectory, then you could measure velocity. Well, you could calculate just where I would be. I'd be in motion. I'd be in motion. Motion is changing position over time. If I'm going fast, my velocity is high. But it looks like I'm standing still to your eye. I'd be in motion. I'd still be in motion.
We are in motion. Standing on a planet that's in motion. Moving on the star that's in motion. We're part of a galaxy in motion. We are in motion. And if you're moving to the left, moving to the right, if you're sleeping in your bed, if you're dancing all night, we are in motion. We're part of the universe in motion. We are in motion.
Let's get Newtonian. First law.
The body in motion will tend to stay in motion. A body at rest will tend to stay at rest.
Second law.
Force is equal to the mass of a body multiplied by the acceleration of the body.
Third law.
Body exerts a force on another body. The other body exerts the same force in the opposite direction. We are in motion. Standing on a planet that's in motion. Moving on the star that's in motion. We're part of a galaxy in motion. We are in motion. And if you're moving to the left or moving to the right, if you're sleeping in your bed or if you're dancing all night, we are in motion. We're part of a universe in motion.
We started the show with Motion by Dr. G. Check out the fun new lyric video for that song on the Theremin 30 playlist on YouTube. After that, I played Say Adieu, a brand new track from Anna Glyph. The recording features some Eurorack synth modules, a Moog Grandmother, and a Moog Etherwave Plus that actually used to belong to me. I sold it to her earlier this year, and of course, she makes it sound better than I ever did. Maybe I should buy it back. Anyway, there's a really clever stop-motion music video for Say Adieu on the Theremin 30 playlist on YouTube. After this break, I'll take a look at the Theremin 30 calendar, and I have new music from Kepa Lehtinen, so stay tuned. The Theremin 30 podcast is supported by affiliate programs with Eargasm Earplugs, eBay, Reverb, and Zounds. When you follow these links and banners on our website, a portion of any purchases you make will help keep this show in the ether. So start shopping at theremin30.com. It's time now for a look at the Theremin 30 calendar of Theremin events. Since this episode's coming out a little early, let's start with August 27th. It's the 126th birthday of Professor Leon Theremin. Or is it? Since he was born in 1896, when Russia used a different calendar format, his birthday really depends on which calendar you're looking at. August 27th is also Play Music on the Porch Day, so get out there. On September 2nd, Schramm performs at the NCN Festival in Deutzen, Germany. Also on September 2nd, Fishbone, featuring thereminist Angelo Moore, will perform at the Mercury Cafe here in Denver. And on September 3rd, Dr. G performs at the Orleans Library in Ottawa. The 10th edition of the NobCon Synthesizer Convention is set for September 9th through the 11th in the Chicago area. And the RCA Theremin Evening is back, streaming live on YouTube on the final weekend of September. For details about these events and more, check out the interactive calendar on theremin30.com. And I can't keep up with all the Theremin events myself, so if you have an event you'd like me to put on the calendar, give me a little nudge. Send me all the details through the website, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Helsinki-based film and television composer Kepa Lehtinen recently sent me a copy of his latest single. It's a lovely and haunting track called It Gets Dark. Let's listen. That was It Gets Dark by Kepa Lehtinen. If you want to hear what he does when he isn't playing theremin, check out his recent TV soundtrack album, Made in Finland, Mobile 101 Season 1. It's available to stream and download in all the usual places. Up next on Theremin 30, I'll visit with Drew Raison from the Electronic Music Education and Preservation Project. So stick around. Hey, this is Rick Reed, producer and host of the Theremin 30 podcast. Did you know that you can advertise with Theremin 30? You can place banner ads on the website or even get a commercial played right here in the middle of the show. It's a great way to promote products, services, and events to the Theremin community. And honestly, this show does not have a huge audience, at least not yet. But that means it doesn't cost much to get involved. You can find rates and details at theremin30.com. Thank you. If you frequent the Theremin 30 website, and I hope you do, you've probably seen links and banners for EMEAP, the Electronic Music Education and Preservation Project. It's one of the music nonprofits I promote because they help spread the word about theremin music. A couple of weeks ago, I got to visit with Drew Raison, the executive director of EMEAP, to find out what it's all about. Drew Raison, thank you so much for being on the Theremin 30 podcast.
I'm very happy to be here. I am honored and looking forward to discussing theremins because it's one of my favorite things to do.
I saw your streaming live tour of EMEAP where you work, and I was just blown away with the assortment of instruments that you have and the historic famous instruments that you have. And I wanted to share a little bit of my experience with my listeners. So to start with, can you tell me what is EMEAP?
Yeah, I could try. We are the steward of a massive collection of historically significant musical instruments and gear. And it started off as a private collection. Our curator started off, he was in a band back in the 70s, a rock band. And when disco hit, his rock band couldn't get a gig because everybody wanted disco. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he got out of the business, sold off most of his instruments, and stepped into the food production world and had great success there. And he decided to then turn back and say, you know, I want to get back into this thing. So he finds his original instruments and he buys a couple of them back. And then he says, you know, I've always wanted one of these. And I've always wanted one of these. And it got out of hand.
But
that's what happens in a perfect world, right? So ultimately, the private collection started to grow at a very, very fast rate. And he kind of stopped and looked back at it and realized that this is not a collection of stuff. In fact, this is a very fine-tuned, curated collection. And he started to exercise his license as a curator. So as opposed to, I've always wanted one of these things, he starts to look into the history of that given object and who created it and what did the early ones look like and what about before they actually were produced? Did they create any prototypes of that given item? Oh. And then he would go after the prototypes. Now, that little story is wonderful, but what you get when you come into EMEAP is you get this dose of 30,000 square feet of this curatorial skill. So yes, we have a massive collection of synthesizers. It's a ridiculous collection, and we've got some rarities beyond belief, but we also have a lot of the prototypes, and we're tied in with the pioneers that created the concepts of these instruments and then created the actual instruments. And then beyond the synthesizers, we have a lot of electromechanical instruments, that is electric pianos, clavinets, that goes very deep, and a massive collection of combo organs. So before synthesizers really took grasp, the combo organ was, in fact, the main means for keyboardists to convey their musical ideas in a band. We have untold sums of those. And then we have a massive collection of tone wheel organs made by Hammond. You might have heard of the A series, the B series, and the C series, the B3 being the doll of all.
Yeah, one of my highlights of watching your tour you did online was to see John Lord's B3.
The collection of tone wheel organs here makes my knees knock. But it really does, because there's nothing more exciting to me, and of course I might have different standards than most, than to walk up to the Hammond organ that ripped that insane solo on Yes's song Roundabout on the album Fragile. And it goes deeper than that, because we have multiples of Keith Emerson's Hammond organs. And it goes deeper and deeper and deeper. And, you know, you think you know a lot about a Hammond organ until you start working here and you realize you kind of don't know anything. And then also recording gear. We have, as our recording studio is up and operating now, we have a massive collection of vintage audio gear and probably no fewer than 2,500 to 3,000 effects pedals, you know, guitar, keyboard, bass effects pedals. Mm. And then we also have one of the world's finest collections of Moog equipment. Dr. Robert Moog was one of the main pioneers of synthesizer design. And we have a, I don't know, you want to call it a shrine maybe?
I think that would be appropriate, yes.
Yeah, it kind of is. And it's funny because we built the Moog exhibit for a specific Keith Emerson-related event that we were having here. And we're never taking that setup down. It's a very special room, and it's loaded with prototypes. Bob Moog's Moog is in that room. It's a freakishly delicious collection, and I am one of the luckiest human beings on earth to stand among these items on a daily basis. And I don't take it lightly. It's a very special opportunity.
You have some historical theremins on display there.
We do. The curator got into theremins very early on in the collection. We have a number of advisors. I refer to them as our eyes on the world. They're the folks that look out for us. And when a rare instrument hits the market and it ought to be preserved, as opposed to ending up in a private collection that a generation's going to miss it and it could end up in a dumpster, sometimes we have to jump in there and really save it. And a couple of our advisors, one in particular, a gentleman named Brian Kehue, helped steer us into the history of the theremin. And again, from the position of a curator, he wants to tell the story of the theremin and show the development of it. So we have, I consider this to be a flagship object. It's a 1929 RCA theremin. That's the large wooden one that is just so beautiful looking, and we see in pictures of many early theremin players. And it also has its matching speaker cabinet. And that theremin sat in our lobby for the longest time. And it was a highlight when Mono Davina, who I'm sure you know and have spoken with.
He's been on the show.
He also lives 5 minutes from here, ironically. And he was playing on that theremin, which is a finicky instrument. The tone of that instrument was shockingly delicious. Mm-hmm. I kind of almost can't describe it beyond, it was almost like, imagine a theremin that kind of had a little bit of a warm blanket feeling to it. But I mean, that's old school technology there at its finest. I will also say the inside of the 1929 theremin is possibly one of my favorite electronic images when we're looking at electronic components, the stuff that the user doesn't get to see. Well, you will swing open the back of that theremin. It's just, it's exciting to me.
The big tubes and the coils.
Just beautiful. I mean, I wouldn't be sticking my hand in there if it was plugged in, but I'll tell you, there's a lot of voltage in there, but really a beautiful looking machine. Yeah. And then we also have a 1954 Moog theremin that was one of Bob Moog's earlier projects and was actually built by Bob and his father, and both of them signed it. And that's probably my favorite, most impactful theremin. And then we also have a series of other Moog theremin instruments, the Troubadour, the Melodia, which are both very common Moog instruments.
One of those was a kit, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, because Bob was doing that. You know, the instruments were available pre-made or as a kit. And I don't know which one it was. And I wasn't involved at EMIAP at the time that they arrived. I was here when we took delivery of a Maestro theremin that has a pair of square plates on an angle, a compound angle, to actuate it. And I was of the understanding that Bob Moog was involved in the design of the instrument, but Brian Kehue, the gentleman I mentioned earlier, pointed out that Bob wasn't. But I think it's one of the coolest looking instruments on the more modern tip. It's not very forgiving because the plates are right smack next to each other. So as you have with a standard theremin, you know, you can separate your arms a bit. This one is a little tighter, but I kind of sense that it wasn't really meant to be as flexible an instrument as a lot of the Bob Moog instruments are.
Yeah, that was made when Gibson owned the Moog name.
I believe so, yeah. That would probably be a Norlin era instrument. Yeah. And it sounds good.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, we have two Moog Etherwave Pro theremins, which are, you know, very desirable precision instruments. We have one that is left-handed and one that is right-handed. And taking delivery of the left-handed Etherwave Pro was kind of a trip, because I'm thinking, you know, I'm a lefty. I'm a deep lefty. I'm not right-handed in any way, shape, and form. So if I care to play a theremin, I'll just stand behind it. And all of a sudden, it becomes a left-handed instrument. So we actually have a pair of them, left and right-handed. And our collection of theremins will be increasing over time. I'm hoping that we have the opportunity to look back at a few of the other Moog instruments from the 60s and continue to expand on that. And then we don't really focus on the newer instruments. I mean, the Etherwave Pros are actually two of the newest instruments that we have in the building, but I'm also interested in seeing some of the more modern instruments that will quantize and kind of allow the performer to have an easier time, because, you know, the theremin's easy to play and not easy to play well. Am I right?
Yeah, exactly. Can someone arrange to go to your studio and use the instruments from your collection? Like if Mono Davina wants to do a new album that features your historical theremins?
I would do that in a heartbeat. We're not going to let you come in and use Jimi Hendrix's Woodstock wah-wah pedal for your guitar solo and your rock band project. That wouldn't happen. But a great example would be the tribute band Manticore, that does Emerson, Lake and Palmer songs approached us about doing a 50-year celebration of their album Trilogy. And of course, we jumped on that. So we brought the entire band in. We used Keith Emerson's gear. We used some of Greg Lake's gear. And we put together a piece, which you can see at emmyapp.org. We have a series called Live at EmmyApp, and you can actually see what the band did. So in cases like that, we say yes. We also bring artists in residence through, and it has to be set up appropriately, but we have Robin Hatch coming in. Robin is a synthesist that has done quite a bit of work on historically significant instruments, and she'll be here for about a week just exploring what we have and putting together compositions on certain pieces of gear. And so we do that as well. So basically what I say is approach us, tell us your idea, and if our mission and your mission match, then let's do it. Tell us what it is. Let's compare notes. And if it's a good fit, then we'll be working together in no time.
I really want to get an in-person tour there soon.
I would love to show you around and any of your listeners as well. Keep your eyes open. I'm structuring a theremin project right now. I was waiting for Mono Divina to finish up his current record that just came out called Aria 51. And then we also work with Rob Schwimmer, who's another amazing thereminist from New York.
Yep, we know Rob.
We enjoy it when he comes down here because he is so good on so many instruments. And he knows every single piece of music ever written. And then, of course, Pamela Stickney is another thereminist that we work with, that we've done some stuff with. And so I'm looking to put together a nice theremin series. And when it happens, I'll reach out to you and let you know, and you can let your listeners know. We're constantly outputting product, and we have so many people that request theremin projects. But it's hard to find capable and available thereminists, but luckily Mono lives literally 5 minutes away.
Thank you so much for taking the time to tell us about your organization.
Well, listen, I really appreciate this. It's been a wonderful conversation. I encourage any of your listeners to reach out directly if you got any questions. emmyapp.org, that's emmeapp.org. And we keep things on Facebook and Instagram very fresh. So if you want to see what we're doing, we encourage you to. If you feel like donating, we encourage you to do that as well. And if you have any questions, please hit us up. We love to talk.
To learn more about EmmyApp and to sign up for a free membership, follow the link to the EmmyApp website in this month's show notes at theremin30.com. You know, with all that talk about Mono Divina, of course I need to finish the episode with his music. From the Aria 51 album by the Divine Hand Ensemble, here's his interpretation of Nightingale and the Rose by Rimsky-Korsakov. Thank you to Dr. G, Anna Glyph, Kepa Lehtinen, and the Divine Hand Ensemble for allowing me to play their music. Also, thanks to my special guest, Drew Raison, the executive director of EmmyApp, the Electronic Music Education and Preservation Project, and to the listeners who support this show with small one-time and monthly donations. If you're new to the podcast, be sure to check out the website and listen to any of the episodes you may have missed. Also, take a look at the merch store for t-shirts, bumper stickers, and other fun things that help support the show. Until next time, I'm your host, Rick Reed. I'll see you somewhere in the ether.
You've been listening to the Theremin 30 podcast. Visit Theremin 30 on the web at theremin30.com.